This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Welcome into the Marvel Stuff Podcast. We're like we do every single week. We're here to talk about how good I look, really. I think we sometimes we spend time on how bad I look, but we haven't really spent any time about any positive things about me. So, Josh Kennedy, could you just start with just anything positive about my overall?
Does it have to be positive? Are those, is there
yes, a B? That's the whole point.
Is there a multiple choice here? Can I say, like, yellow is like an okay color on you?
You know
like,
what?
Can I give you a neg comment?
Nope. We brought JJ in for a reason. JJ, say something positive about me. You just met me.
Are definitely here on the show.
This is unbelievable. This backfired about as well as I thought it would. So let's just jump into the Marvel stuff because that's what we're here for.
He passed the vibe check though. So
he did. Well, for you guys, I feel hurt, to be honest with you. Hey, that's JJ. Fair. You joined us. We're excited. Tell the audience a little bit about you.
Hey, so I'm a Grand Rapids local.
Things that are interesting.
Oh, things that are interesting. Okay, perfect. Big, huge D&D fan. I grew up in the 80s, 90s, so love growing up with Marvel, big high eras there, and watch pretty much all of the Marvel Cinematic Universe from the shows, TV, and movies. And a big comic book fan as well. So this movie is a great representation of comic in media and just the from page to big screen. Absolutely the best.
If you didn't know what movie he's talking about, we're here to talk about, obviously,
that's what I was going to say. Perfect transition without even trying. We're gonna get a little bit deeper on Across the Spider-Verse. We're excited. We did our full review last week, and really we just can't get enough about talking about this movie because it is that fantastic. Noah King Bates may be joining us a little bit later, but give him some time, and his buddy JJ's here representing. And instead of being the two straight white guy show talking about inclusivity, we decided to get some outside perspective to, you know, kind of make
Absolutely.
Things good.
Well, before we jump in, JJ, what's your thoughts of the movie? You watched it, loved it, hated it?
Loved it. Great. I was a big fan of the first one, so seeing this next one come in, it captured the magic of the very first Into the Spider-Verse and expanded on the universe, giving us great new worlds with color, vibe, great Spider-Man, Spider-People. And as you were talking about, the inclusivity of just feeling seen in this movie is perfect, I think. Great room for growth, and I'm very interested to see what's coming next for this franchise.
Yeah, I mean, we have a whole topic dedicated to a specific character, but I think there's a lot of characters in this movie from a lot of different, give a lot of different ways to include people. Obviously, we have Miles. There's the thing about Gwen, which we'll talk about. But even things like Hobie and like having that whole being a revolutionist is like a unique angle. And there's people who are like that, who feel like not enough people stand up to the man. So I think it's interesting.
We're still early enough. It's on the screen. Spoiler alert. Going forward, we're going to spoil the crap out of Across the Spider-Verse. Yes. So don't add us.
Good catch. Yeah. It's been a week. Everyone knows you watch everything in the first weekend. That's obvious stuff. But yeah, this movie is a ton of fun. It's also very successful. And I want to break down just how successful it is.
Just 120 for the first weekend. That's what I saw, but it might be a little bit higher.
For opening weekend, 120.5, which if you want to check against other things, is about $1 million more than Guardians 3 did, which was interesting. It's second only to Super Mario Bros. This year, which is, again, interesting. Super Mario Bros. So the two top movies are animated movies, which I think says a lot.
Important to point out, they're also both PG, so you get the kids angle and the repeat watches, not to dig on the quality, because obviously I super enjoyed the movie, and I've heard Super Mario Bros. Is also fantastic, but if you know how to get like the mix of, you know, geeky comic book fans or just adults that are going to go to the movies and enjoy something and get the kids involved, I mean, it's just gangbusters on how much money you're going to make.
Yep, And I think I'm curious to know if it'll ever catch Super Mario Bros., which right now is at 1.3 billion worldwide.
So much money.
Which is,
I think it's on its way.
Right now, it's.
I think this one gets a billion. I wouldn't be surprised if I'm honestly going to be shocked if Across the Spider-Verse doesn't hit a billion. Honestly, it's going to be, if it doesn't, it's going to be super close.
Yeah, it's an interesting take. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy topped out at like 787, and it had a similar opening weekend. But it does have better reviews, I think.
I think Spider-Verse has more longevity with a theater run than Guardians does personally. So, well, I mean, I'm, you know, willing to be wrong, and it's not going to knock the quality at all, but I would, yeah, I stand by it. $1 billion or bust. No, I'm kidding. It's not a bust.
Yeah. I think a billion is an interesting number to hit. I do think it'll cross Guardians at some point.
Yeah.
I think Super Mario Bros. Is probably out of its range of outcomes, I would think, just because Flash is coming up. So the sort of superhero
Flash is gonna gonna do it. They also like just the budget for marketing on this new Flash movie is insane. I'm excited to watch it because I mean a lifelong Batman fan, so you gotta put some respect on it. The Flashpoint storyline's great, but this isn't the Flash podcast, so I digress for now. We'll talk about that when it comes out because we are gonna break the rules and talk about a DC movie on here.
Yeah,
because we make the rules.
I do think it's interesting that it's already closing in on the entire run of Into the Spider-Verse within 2 weeks. Into Spider-Verse got to 380.
It's important to kind of get the context of that because Miles Into the Spider-Verse was essentially like the jumping off point for that character. He was obviously gaining some popularity within the comic books. And, little black kids felt very represented by him and just the idea of Spider-Man's powers and stuff, just kind of taking it into that universe and putting a total spin on it. Obviously, Peter Parker, Spider-Man's one of the most iconic heroes of all time, and no one can argue that. I think Miles is certainly on his way. But when Into the Spider-Verse was kind of like initially announced, I mean, us as nerds, it's hard to gauge what the broader society really knows or doesn't know about a character, but I feel like the character just wasn't that well known yet. And based on the success of that first movie, that fully explains why the second one's just going crazy.
JJ, yeah, animated movies. Are you in on animated movies?
Yes. Always been. Cause it's a representation of like the comics and growing up with that and seeing that represented in the bigger media is great. I think the Into the Spider-Verse was really great in bringing potential for No Way Homes, where we get more of the Spider-Verse in real media when we're having the Tom Hollands and all of the other Spider-Men interacting. Spoilers if you haven't seen that, which you should have by now.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Coach brought that up last week. Like, I think without Into the Spider-Verse, No Way Home just wasn't going to get greenlit because they didn't know if it was going to work or not.
Yeah. And the idea of the Spider-Verse has been out there for a while in comics, and now bringing that and broaching that opens it up to more multiverse stuff within Marvel and where they're kind of going now over the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about how that's kind of the new trend on this podcast before, and I mean, whether it's good or bad, if it's a good story and they know how to do it, then it's fantastic. If they start going a little bit crazy, which we might see in future projects where they try and take it just a leg too far, where Nick Cage makes a third Ghost Rider movie or something. But for right now, the multiverse is very healthy and it seems to be a pretty good product for people to keep capitalizing on.
Yeah, I mean, they did a great job in this one where they also include like a very small snippet of the live action into it, where they're, so they're not overdoing it. So they keep the ground of the animated, but also give you like this also goes into the larger Marvel universe.
All right, real quick question then, JJ. Who is your favorite character in Across the Spider-Verse? And then we'll kind of jump in a little bit.
It's a toss up between Spider-Woman, Spider-Gwen, and I think just a brief cameo of Spider-Cat. Just having the
Spider-Cat gets the love. Okay.
Having that spider the spider web come out of his mouth is like a hairball. Perfect. Love that.
That's funny. Cameo you did not the spider T-Rex that didn't tickle your fancy at all.
He needed more screen time. Spider-Cat really stole that little scene.
Showed out. Yep, I get it.
I do like it. Yep. All right. Well, let's jump into our main topic then. As you guys can tell from the name of this episode, one of the things we want to talk about is this Gwen Stacy story. Sort of, it's gained steam in the past week. I've got a few articles about it. Josh, what article did you just read? So we can sort of
the one I pulled up that we're going to be referencing a lot is the article posted by IGN June 7th. So if you guys want to like kind of follow along, feel free to pull that one up. But yep, it's kind of a speculation thing at this point because they definitely haven't outright confirmed it, but there's subtle and some not so subtle hints that either her story is relatable to the trans community or she herself is trans. So it's definitely an interesting topic. It's gaining a lot of traction, like Coach said, and we really wanted to kind of break it down and see how we feel about that and if it's, you know, true or not, or if they're ever gonna let us know.
Yeah, I think I would preface this conversation by just saying, for me, I think there's an obvious at least parallel. So there's
100%.
At some point, there's no way that it wasn't known while they were doing it, is what I would say. Now, it's up to each individual person. Everyone judges art their own way. Unless the creators say something explicitly or the art itself says it explicitly, arguing about it, getting mad at people who have different opinions just isn't going to get anybody anywhere. But we're going to talk through sort of the different hints and keys, and then we'll talk about what we think about it, and then maybe we'll do a prediction if we think it'll ever be mentioned in the upcoming movie. Because like we said in the original review, if you guys don't remember, go back and listen to it. Me and Josh both said, this is a Gwen Stacy movie. Like,
100%.
There's like a 45-minute chunk of it that's a Miles movie, but like the majority of this movie really feels like it's her story, her arc that sort of comes and goes. And when you look into it even deeper, it's kind of cool. So we'll start at the most basic part of it, right? And that's that it's the color schemes are the color of the trans flag. Now, you could argue, right, she's always been pink and white with some blue. That's true. But it feels like they really made sure it was the right shades of pink and blue at the right times. Often it was when she was feeling sort of lost. It was often when she was feeling not seen. That's sort of when the colors, you could see them as very muted. They were sort of melting in the background. You would see the blue and the pink sort of melting in the background. They did a lot of color scheme stuff, which I thought was cool. I think the most iconic scene, I'm going to pull up an image. You guys can watch this on YouTube if you want. There's even like this one right here is like, it is the flag on its side. It's in the right order. It's, you know, it's blue, pink, blue.
Also, it's part, like you got to acknowledge it, like during this specific scene, once you've seen the movie, it's essentially like kind of a parallel to coming out. It's her saying that she is Spider-Gwen to her father. And that's kind of another reason why the parallels are kind of being drawn. Now, JJ, you have any thoughts on it so far?
Yeah, one of the first things I caught in her universe is there's a shot in her room, and right above the door is that protect trans kids. And I saw the flag, now. And I point that out to my best friends who are at the theater with me, and like there's a sign up there. I'm so glad they added that in.
It's very
and
cool.
Her coming out is very indicative to many people within the LGBT community. Is her coming out story wasn't under her own rule or chance. Like, she didn't get a say in when she got to do it. It was almost forced upon. Almost have to do it. And a lot of times for
it's more common than it should be, 100%.
Yep. Whether you're trans or you're gay, lesbian, many times you are dealing with it in your own way and trying to come to terms with it. And sometimes society and everything else is happening around you forces you to come out to family members, to authority figures, whoever, medical professionals, sometimes before you're ready and before you're comfortable. And in this movie, that was a big theme for Gwen and almost every Spider-Man, of being able to tell somebody, most people who are supposed to be the, you know, your parents, the safest people they're supposed to be for you, to tell them something so secret that you have been and you have just enjoyed and you are, and you're scared that they're going to accept you for that. They're going to still see you as the person that you are and know that you're still the same person. And that theme comes back with many of the Spider-Man and many of the Spider-Man stories. So it is very big a correlation between an LGBT Q plus story, whether it's trans or whether it's just part of that. Coming out and being able to tell someone in a safe way isn't always a safe time to do it. And they did a great job of portraying that in this. And one of the things in the article, I think at the very bottom, I think it's a quote from Mark Hamill, is if you think this person is a representation, then they are, because who are we to tell you not?
I was going to bring up that exact quote.
Yeah, what's I think is interesting to note is while this whole thing is happening, there's sort of a her getting rejected early on. And I think it's interesting that she isolates herself in this community of Spider-Man, which I, you know, obviously I'm not part of the community, so I don't know. But is that something from your experience where, like, when you do get, maybe not, I don't know if you've been rejected, I don't know anyone who has, but is it easy to sort of isolate yourself within the community that understands, where we would say the Spider-Man universe, that little pocket, is supposed to be the parallel to other people in the LGBTQ community? Like, is it easy to sort of get overly isolated?
Yep. So one thing I'll mention is, like, I'm not a monolith for the LGBT Absolutely. Community.
Right. Yeah. No one is.
But the experiences can echo across. One of the things that can happen for people is what's known as a pride phase. When you're able to come out and be 100% who you are, you full embrace. And for me, coming out and being in college and being able to be part of an LGBT group, going to events and prides, which I didn't do before because I didn't feel safe, I didn't have access to those things, it is very easy to submerge yourself in that and just find yourself in an environment where you get to be you and express yourself in such a way that other people don't realize that you have been forced to mask. You've been forced to kind of put on this persona for other people because you're scared of what's going to come out or what people are going to say. So yes, once you get into a safe space where there are no judgments and you're able to fully embrace who you are, you want to be in that. Why would you want to go back? Why would you want to revert? And I think that was Gwen's fear, is being sent back and facing her dad, yep. who she left on that really, like, pivot of a cliffhanger for the dad. And I'm out. But now she's got to go back. Now she's got to face that. And that is a fear of coming back to those parents and what happens when things fall out of this perfect world. And they do a great job of her sneaking back in. And it is the father that reaches out because she's trying to sneak back out. She right. doesn't even want to face that. And he is a true parent in this moment. And he's frustrated, but he's had time to think and he's had time to understand and meet her where she's at. And you see that with, like, the growth of her hair and more of the colors now in her hair of the pride flag for the trans, and the colors seem to soak into each other and between the two of them. The hug when she first, I think, leaves has that bright color and pop. So they knew what they were doing in just telling the story of a parents and child coming together in that moment. And that does echo with this community.
Yeah. I really, this is always my favorite scene long before, like, I mean, I'd noticed the flag in the room. I actually did notice this one on his jacket.
I didn't notice it in my first viewing either.
Before I noticed, either, it was still my favorite scene of the whole movie. Yep. Because it's, even if it's not about the community, it's always good to be accepted by your parents. Everyone wants to be accepted no matter what your fault is. He really does come to grips with his own personal belief, right? His belief is, as a cop, you can't have vigilantes. I mean, growing up in a Christian world, a lot of people I know that are very Christian, it's very easy to have a hard stung belief that's like, I believe this, I can't accept you because it's against who I am. Right. And this dad does a great job of challenging who he was, because he puts accepting his daughter above that.
Yeah, I mean, that's an excellent point, because yeah, it's not all about it, like it's a Gwen movie, like we said, but it's not just her journey. The father also has his own journey of moving through mm-hmm. acceptance of who his child is, which is also like a beautiful story to see portrayed on screen. And he seems to have done it the right way now, or at least one of the right. Obviously, there's no real right and wrong in this scenario, but his initial reaction was more just knee jerk. And I have heard of horror stories of people from the LGBTQ community coming out to their parents, and the initial one is like, you know, get out of my house. And then once there's time to cool down, there's a better reaction a little bit later. That's not the ideal situation, but it's better than just completely dismissing the person, or in this case, arresting Gwen for killing her best friend or whatever, or being a vigilante. So another cool story.
To JJ's point, like it's probably easier if she would have come out to him other than.
Yep. 100%. Neither of them were ready for it. That's the interesting thing. Yeah. It's like she hadn't prepared himself. He had no way of preparing himself for that type of thing. So yeah, it was just a messy situation, and I'm glad that they took this film to resolve that issue.
And in this, you see the parallels of someone who is forced to come out and what they fear they will lose, to someone who decides to leave a job because they are accepting of their child, because she's a vigilante, and it doesn't par with what his beliefs are. So they're, the idea that someone can choose to be accepting and choose to leave a job, well, those of us who are struggling with identity and the idea that we could lose our jobs just for coming out or just for being who we are, you have both of those parallels here in this movie. They shoot that, and it's easy for people who aren't part of that to kind of miss it. But those of us who have lived it and experienced it, we do feel that we have that connection. And we resonate with that.
Yeah. And then I think what's an interesting point in this film that I really loved is when she tells Miles, don't do it. Don't tell anyone.
Oh, that's a whole other thing we should definitely discuss. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. The advice of that, given because she hasn't resolved her own, or because she's still running. And so she doesn't want him to experience the same pain that she's experiencing, not realizing that if she goes home,
exactly.
Yeah. One of the things in coming out, I learned early on, and I give this advice to other people who are struggling with identity, is it took you time to get to the point of accepting who you are. You can allow other people time to accept that as well. Other people may just be learning about it when you're telling them, and you have to, you know, give them the same grace that you give yourself, in that they're not going to be at the exact same place that you are. And in the movie shows that, because she comes back, I think, months later, and that is his time to understand, accept, and be where she needs him to be. And that's advice is hard to learn in the moment, and it's easy to look back and say, yep, it just, things heal, or things need time to get to that point. But coming out is never a one and done. You are constantly doing it for the rest of your life.
I was just gonna touch on that too, because it's not like your parents are the only people you don't necessarily have to come out, but you know what I mean, like the parents are like, they're one step in coming out 1,000 times, which that's kind of the way things are, unfortunately. But yeah, it is kind of annoying, I'm sure. I mean, you can relate more than I can. Once you get to know someone, that's kind of just something that comes out, and you're kind of putting that to, I don't know if you want to call it a situation or that conversation topic once again, that maybe, you know, you're used to having that conversation now, but when it first started, you're doing it over and over and over and hoping for better reactions, or good reactions at the very least.
Yep. You're gauging people and seeing how safe it is to even just bring up casual things. And sometimes I'm to the point where it's not on me to gauge your how comfortable you are. I'm just going to be me. I'm just going to talk about my life and what I was doing and what my weekend was with my fiance or my family or things like that. And if that's different than what you originally thought of who I was, great, wonderful. If we want to talk about it, that's great. Otherwise, I'm moving on.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we definitely established pretty well that it's almost inarguable how much this is definitely a parallel to the, right. to the trans community, to this community. It was intentional. The colors are intentional. I think if you don't think that, I think you're just intentionally trying to lie to yourself. So the question becomes, I don't know if it's a question, but it is the question the internet's asking, right? And the question is,
right.
does that mean Gwen is a trans person? Does that mean
right.
she's
I mean,
trans?
There's also, is- I mean, you can be a supporter of the community, an ally to the community. It's not necessarily reflective of the individual person. So there's lots of, you know, that speculation on the, you know, on the film. I mean, the way I look at it is personally, it's like, this is a franchise that's been around for two movies. They are subtly putting things in. They don't have to confirm or deny anything if they don't want to. Would it be a good idea for them to? I mean, I'm not the expert in that situation. It's kind of just, you could leave well enough alone and just kind of keep running with what you're doing. Or I don't know. I mean, I'm not the expert here. Should they confirm or deny this? Coach, JJ, I mean, how do you feel about it?
I think it's a great point to bring up the idea that no one owes you anything when it comes to their sexuality and their identity. Right. And what does that do for you? If knowing that this individual is trans, what does that give you as two cis white men, I'm assuming? What does that mean that you're not going to invest in this character? You're not going to watch the next things about them? Or is the intrigue about it more important? The identity of characters and who they are and who they want to present, I think that's the more important story here is how does Gwen approach this, if that is going to be the case? How will the Spider-Verse, which seems to be very accepting as we see a multitude yep. of Spider-Men, Spider-People, in various stages of just size, disability, genders, representations. We have digital ones, species, all of that in there. And are we then needing to go in and address the sexuality and identity of every single
that's exactly right. Like it's not anyone's business. So what, like, what is it going to accomplish?
I think the big thing here is because they use so much of the trans colors and pride with her universe and putting key things in to have the conversation, it can be said like, okay, are we saying it or are we just experiencing how people live? And this is just my life. And this is in a universe where it's more accepted. Her colors were white and pink, teal and black for the longest time. And now you're focusing on the white and the teal and the pink and forgetting that there's also black involved in her costume as well.
Right.
But yes, there is that trans sign. There is the trans colors. But in this universe, what do those colors mean? As you know, in different universes, there's Coca-Cola is different and
a generic brand. God, one of the low key best jokes of the entire soda, a generic brand. Like, oh yeah. God, that was the best.
It's an awesome joke.
Yeah. But they put a lot of emphasis on color in her universe. And I think it is that big separation. But the story is, like I mentioned, of that coming out and the identity, you're seeing that in every Peter Parker and every Spider-Man as you're going through, because they're all talking about, like, do they come out or do they not, and what they're holding back from the people that they love because of these canon events, and how did that change them? In everyone's almost everyone's coming out story, they have their own canon events of what triggers that story and what triggers them coming out. So I think that's the bigger story here is how does everyone else feel about their own identity and representation and how comfortable they feel about just who they are and who they can be with the ones they love.
Yeah. So this conversation reminds me, we have a podcast here. We call it Marvelous Depths. And we did an episode when Shang-Chi came out. The whole reason we started it was for that episode. And I felt a certain way about the relationship between Shang-Chi and his father. And I just, the parallel to my life, I enjoyed having it, right? So from my perspective, the way I see this, right, the fact that it's parallel to me was good enough in Shang-Chi. Now, just the fact that it's parallel to the trans community, would it be better if they said she was trans? I think that's for each individual person to sort of decide on their own. And like the Mark Hamill quote says, you get to make that decision. That's the whole point of art. Mm-hmm. So if you feel like you connect to her more, if she's if it's an actual trans, that's fine. Then make that decision. You're the one watching the art. Unless it tells you otherwise, then who cares, right? But from my experience, like I said, from Shang-Chi, the parallel was good enough for me. I appreciated that movie because of its parallel, which is why I appreciate when there's parallels in movies.
Yeah.
And I'm glad this movie has it because it's such a good movie. It does such a good job. And I'm glad we're having this conversation because then now you can go back and watch it. And maybe, you know, someone who didn't notice it the first time can come back and realize it. Maybe just a classic cis white guy like me would watch it and go, oh, I get it. I can understand that struggle is similar to the Spider-Man one. So I think it's cool. I appreciate it. It's another reason this movie is making so much money and doing so well.
Yeah, I can't find the exact quote, but I mean, obviously there was a lot of tweets going around on this, and just one that I particularly liked was just like, even just the hints is something that young trans or members of like children that are part of the LGBTQ that are in conservative households, this might be the closest they ever get to getting to see something like this presented on screen until they are obviously moved out of their home and things like that. And just little things where you like, I don't feel represented by this because it's not for me, but I love that a lot of people can draw the parallels like Coach was saying, and everybody's story is important to tell and to understand. And if you can see that presented in a medium like this, it's a beautiful thing.
You know, I do feel represented by this a little bit. And it's not in the same level, but I think everybody at some point is going to come up against somebody important in your life. There's going to be something about you that you're going to want to tell them.
Yeah, I mean, if you break it down to the very basics, I can definitely agree with you there. Because, I mean, I myself grew up in a very conservative Christian household. And now, you know, I've got many friends that are part of the LGBTQ community. And, you know, I'm very left-leaning in my political beliefs, which is not anything like my hometown. And, you know, to the barest thing like that, I 100%, I mean, yeah. I can definitely relate to that.
Definitely a lesser degree, though. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, no, that's why I was saying I don't identify with the true, like, I guess, parallel here. But I get what you're saying, too, that, like, even the smallest thing like that can be something you relate to.
Well, if you see as, like, how comics were represented in the past, where X-Men's struggle is very similar to, like, civil rights movements. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot of the big struggles back then. And now one of the big fights now is the trans community has become one of the forefront of hate and oppression on top of the LGBT part of the community itself. So as growing up, I've always seen Marvel. I've always seen the idea of like being a mutant or being different close to the core of like what it meant to just be me and be.
And I think that was always kind of the intention of X-Men just in general. I mean, they're the outcasts for a reason. Like, I think that's why it's the favorite of members of that community. I mean, and members not of that community, obviously, but the fact that it's pretty clearly drawn that mutants are intended to show kind of hated minority in certain story arcs. So it's important stories to be told.
And what I got from when I was little is being different was good. It meant something special. And that's what I like drew me to fantasy, drew me to Marvel and comics and X-Men. Like maybe this differentness that I feel is meant that I'm meant for bigger things or I'm meant for better things because I feel different. And you see that in the stories and you see that portrayed in a way. And now to see it nowadays and see how kids who are dealing with that are getting that same message of like, being different is hard and is difficult. And if you can get through that, persevere through that, there's great things on the other side. And there are communities, there are people that will accept. And it's never going to be a one and done. It's never going to be right away, but it is going to be out there. And there are people that will support you. And there are people that will protect you. And that, I think, is the message that you're going to get through this now.
Well, this is, like you said, like we've all said it, it's a beautiful message. So the next question I have for you is the greater Hollywood community going to accept this message? And I think a good way to gauge it in an interesting conversation is the Oscars. It's a movie that's getting a lot of praise. We're early in the year. Well, not early, about halfway through it. Across the Spider-Verse. Do we think it's going to win an Oscar? Do we think it's going to have that sort of that love for the more pompous people of our community here in the movie watching business?
It has many beats that will, I think, win awards from music to just cinematography, animation.
Oh, yeah, we definitely got to talk about Metro Boomin's album for this whole thing. Oh, God, I listen out of the gym all the time since it was released. But, yeah, sorry to interrupt.
No, you're good. You're good. Like, there's so much in this that is Oscar worthy. In instead of like an Oscar bait movie, this was just a good movie with 100%. All of these quality things put into it, and I think it's done in that well, in such a strong way. I think it's great, and I think it does have that potential. I'm very excited to see how this pushes things going forward, and what the competition will be.
Yeah, I'll make a prediction, almost a guarantee. I almost guarantee this wins Best Picture for anime.
Well, yeah, you got to acknowledge it. Like, what other competition does it have? And you brought up Mario, which I've heard is very, very good. And I suppose, but at the same time, I said it before we even started this podcast, that feels like eye candy, Hollywood acting, nostalgia, all kind of turned into one. And like, is it a quality movie? I don't know. I haven't seen it, but I can say that this movie, like the storytelling in it was something to behold. So I'd be surprised if it was somehow topped by,
I think this is a class above Mario.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll put it out there. If you guys ever see any bets or anything, make bets on it, but cause it's going to win Best Animated Picture. I think the more interesting topic is the other categories. Can it win some sort of special effects thing? Despite the fact that it's completely animated, it's never happened. Be interesting. Will it have a shot at music? I mean, you know, Lion King did it for Disney once, Beauty and the Beast, but not often do animated movies have a shot really in any other categories. I don't even know if like by rule it has a shot at Best Picture. They made animated because I want to say it was Beauty and the Beast got nominated for an actual Oscar one time.
Mm-hmm. And it's not allowed. I mean, it's one of their weird that animated movies can't win Best Picture, but it is very, very good.
I can see it winning Best Animated because of the diversity in the animation. They use so many different styles and representations for the different universes. Like even if you're thinking of like Spider-Punk and the different ratios of how they were representing the artwork for him, and there's like certain rules that he followed and broke in certain moments of how they would express him and the art drawn. And just seeing that, having an art degree itself, this movie was beautiful. Beautiful in so many moments and ways. So if it doesn't, like if there's another movie that uses one type of animation and wins, everything.
Yeah, if you're curious about the actual breakdown of Spider-Punk, it was shared around the internet. I posted it on the Marvel Stuff Facebook group if you want to go see. Like it laid down the individual layers and how they really animated that character, and I've said it, and like he was my favorite looking character. As far as like actual favorite character in the movie, it's a toss-up between him and Spider-Gwen, but the coolest animation for me was that Cyberpunk, just very English punk scene thing going on. Mm-hmm. I was into it big.
Yeah. They made everyone's Spider Universe so unique in their own way and how
that's so smart. And that's the best way you could take full advantage of the medium of animation, because mm-hmm. you can't do like exactly that in a live action platform. They tried to do it in Multiverse of Madness, and it did look cool, but it's not the same. It just can't be, because animation just has certain capabilities that live action doesn't have now. I'm not going to say it could never have it, but not anytime soon.
Yeah. There are certain things that you can do with animation that doesn't come off as cheesy. Like, I think that's one of the things that, like, the Fantastic Four movies has really struggled with, having a very good Mr. Fantastic, because the stretching abilities just comes off really weird when you're talking live action. Mm-hmm. But if you put that into an animation, it makes sense. It's easier to get all of that correctly. And that's the thing with this animation, is you have the ability to express so many different powers and expressions in so many different ways, and not have it feel off, where you have like this weird uncanny valley feel when you're looking at something. Yeah,
that's a very interesting conversation I want to have once we kind of wrap up this Oscar talk, is like, what other Marvel characters could benefit from an animated movie or franchise similar to Spider-Verse, if you guys want to think about that while we kind of break down further Oscar talks.
The last thing I want to say on the Oscars is Into the Spider-Verse did win the Oscar.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, the first one won. It'd be real surprised if this one didn't win. It's a toss up for me which one I actually like more. I think when I first came out of the theater, I was like, I definitely still like the first one more, but the more I'm sitting with this one, I'm like, oh, it's going to take one rewatch and it might turn me. We'll see.
Oh, I definitively like this one better. The only thing the first one has on it is
the beautiful thing about this team is, like, they just keep doing this representation thing. Like, Miles being a representative for the Black community and just young kids in those type of neighborhoods was just so unreal and, like, almost unheard of as far as, like, blockbuster movies. So the fact that they were able to do it and win an Oscar for it, like, I can't wait to see them do with the third one. Like, it's not even just like a spider story at first. There's so many side stories and background elements that just, you have to, these are like the perfect movies for rewatching, because I feel like you're going to notice something or learn something new upon every rewatch.
Yeah, the story elements in it for him is so great. Being Black and Latino character who in the comics is also bi, and then the idea that he's in a universe where the spider that was supposed to bite, that bit him, was supposed to
in a different universe. Yeah,
I think it's implied through it that it's actually was supposed to bite Miles in
a different 42. Miles. Yeah.
Yep.
And so that Miles becomes Prowler, and that I
it's gonna be so good. Oh man, the cliffhanger at the end of this one, it's just so crazy. Can't wait for the third one. Oh, that was one more thing that I noticed in this that they switched up, and I wonder if they did it to kind of clear up confusion or if there was like a conscious effort of it, but the father's name was Jefferson Davis in the first one, Officer Jefferson Davis, and in this one he's Officer Jeff Morales. So I don't know if, like, they were like, he's not the stepdad, or he is the stepdad, or if he took on his wife's name. I mean, I'm curious to know if they're actually going to kind of touch on that at all. Is it that important? Probably not, but it's just one of those little things. I was like, I don't think you got that one past me. I noticed.
I didn't catch that one. That's interesting, yeah.
Before we talk about other movies getting animated, let's talk about the fact that this is the last, they only have one more. They've come out and they've said,
tell Sony's like, oh, a billion? Yeah, let's make 17 more of these and make every single one of these side characters their own franchise, because they'll do it and then they'll Morbius it into the ground.
I just don't know.
Hopefully not. It's not going to be the same team. That's the important thing. I think this team has
said they're only doing these three.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. I thought you were saying animation in general, and I wouldn't be surprised if they make a bunch more and it's going to make me mad. But this team, this trilogy. That's a whole other conversation. Is this going to be the best Spider-Man trilogy? I can almost say definitively it will be, as long as they don't, you know, shit the bed in the third one.
They have the potential to make it a great trilogy and leave it open for those standalone movies. But I think putting it in this and capping it off of the third gives it an ability to be, it's great, a great movie without ruining it. Because I think if you go too far, that's the problem that you
well, that's kind of having. The Marvel effect. Not, I mean, us as super nerds don't seem to mind, but you know, we're getting more and more diluted from our main heroes in the Marvel universe, and the popularity of the cinematic universe overall is plateauing would be mm-hmm. probably a good way to put it. And it's yeah. definitely, I don't think it's decreasing yet, but it's, you know, it's not on the uptick anymore.
I think yeah. it relies on its big IP characters, right? Yes. Spider-Man is a big deal. It relies on the big names now.
Yeah, once they get like X-Men and Fantastic Four in there, I mean, it's going to be the renaissance of the MCU probably, but yeah, you know, we're a ways out from that.
Yeah, but now we're talking about a character that just recently was introduced, like Spider-Gwen, a few years ago.
And even Miles, like, Miles is even that old of a character. Like this, yeah, I made that comment too. Like mm-hmm. There was a quick turnaround on these two characters. That like yep. they know what they have, and it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, and there are more talking points than characters that have been in Marvel comics for a while. Like Spider-Man 2099. I remember when that comic came out, and I'm like, oh, this is extremely interesting. When Marvel did the 2099. Because I remember X-Men and Chamber and things like that who got pulled. And so now he's been around longer, but we know more of Miles than we do of Spider-Man 2099. And
yeah.
I think that's amazing what they're doing is getting these characters and making them the new forefront of
it's
Marvel.
It's so phase. Smart. And yeah, I you know, lovingly call it the Harley Quinn effect. And that's exactly what's happening with Spider-Gwen is she's on that. Like they're giving her, she has a bunch of comic books. She had a few comic book spinoffs. She had the Gweniverse where she was just different versions of all the different superheroes. And she got these animated movies. I would be completely shocked if we don't get at least a Spider-Gwen like cameo in the next Spider-Man game. Like mm-hmm. this character is on the rise, and they're going to be casting a live action one within the next 3 years. I'm pretty much guaranteed that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. To answer your earlier question, Josh, I thought about it. Miss Marvel, I think it'd been, I almost think that character would have been better served having a really cool.
That's another stretchy one.
Movie. Stretchy is always hard.
Stretchy is weird.
To move over, and they did an okay job having that crystallize overlay.
That was smart. Yep.
It was very smart, but stretchy characters, it is just so hard to carry on to.
Like, side note, they very recently just killed off Ms. Marvel in the comic books. Obviously, they're gonna revive her. So I guess spoilers to the comic book readers, but she's mm-hmm. She's kind of the topic of conversation at the moment, and maybe I think it might be a little bit of like a, I don't know if you want to call it a publicity stunt, but maybe like a character push to help with the upcoming Marvel's movie. But Coach, I think you're right. That's a pretty good pull. She would definitely benefit.
But yeah. I think it would have been better served. I think it would have been better served as like a really cool animated movie. Because you sort of see parts of it in her live action show.
Yeah.
I think she'd be even more popular if they'd have gone that route.
Yeah, honestly, she could have had a similar story to like the Miles and Spider-Gwen if they would have put like invested a lot of money into that character. Unfortunately, Miles has the backing of being a Spider-Man that helps him make a bunch of money regardless of who's under the mask, and Ms. Mm-hmm. Marvel doesn't really have that going for her character. But you're right, if they did this same type of animation for a Ms. Marvel movie or even animated TV show, probably movie though, it would look really cool.
Yeah.
JJ, yep. who do you think
I think best? Fantastic Four needs to be.
I know I knew you would, because I don't want to copy your answer, so now I gotta think of something else, so go ahead and explain.
Yeah. I again it's the stretchy thing when it comes down to Mr. Fantastic. You saw how even when they did it in Across the Multiverse of Madness, they limited how much they had of him being stretchy or whatever, because it just becomes weird. And as I mentioned, it's like it gets into that uncanny valley effect of like, this seems off, there's too much CGI. So when you go into the animation, I think you're able to expand on your reality, and like that stretchy powers are okay. I think maybe something else that they could do is kind of push into more of the Galactus stuff, anything with Galactus animated. Bringing that in as well, because when you also have size proportions to like smaller, that's when things get weird. They did good with the Eternals and just keeping it limited.
Yeah.
With those beings, but when you have like such a large character like Galactus, I think animation is where it's going to be best.
Yeah, it's interesting. Never going to happen. It's too big of a property for them at this point.
That's where I'm trying to hit it in the middle when in my thought process. I'm like, I don't want to pick a character that's too popular because the likelihood of them actually turning it into a TV show is like relatively low. So you got to hit someone that's almost like a B-tier character. Like, this isn't Marvel, but, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is almost pretty much always going to be better as an animated franchise over live action. They did the live action things back in the 80s and 90s, which personally I was a fan of, but you know, it was definitely odd, and they're definitely, you know, big time animated.
What about Excalibur?
Excalibur as the deep. Yeah. I mean, I think that's another one. That's deep cuts too, but I don't know. I like it though. You can almost, yeah. I like the way they did. JJ, you and I discussed New Mutants a little bit. If they went the New Mutants route, they have a very interesting set of powers within that team, depending on which team or which comic book arc you're going for. But you could make, you know, some of Wolverine's spin-off characters could be a pretty interesting. Like, I would be excited if they did an X-23 animated movie, because it's like it's just beyond. They did Logan, where she was the secondary character and she was awesome in live action, but I also feel like there's just certain things that you could turn it up to 11, where you had the different clones, like Dake and Dark Wolverine's one of my favorites, that like I don't know if they're ever gonna do in a live action, but you could do like, I guess, the offspring or the clones of Logan as an animated franchise, and I think that would be cool. And then like you got the opportunity to bring in like an animated Hugh Jackman cameo or something like that. So that's my official answer, the Wolverine offspring.
I'll tell you one more that kind of struck me. I watched a Japanese anime recently called like Suzume something something. It means Suzume Open the Doors. Anyway, it's like very stylish. It's very cool. It's like this character who goes on this adventure, and it just made me think Elsa Bloodstone, who we just saw.
Ooh, in Werewolf. I almost went dark too. I almost said Ghost Rider though.
If you could do like a very highly stylized anime style movie about Elsa Bloodstone hunting monsters, I would be.
Yeah, it's kind of like Gothic Tomb Raider. So yeah, I mean, I'm into it. Let's do it. I would definitely love to see Elsa Bloodstone get translated too.
I think the last one that I would probably pitch is Gen X, because Jubilee has not had a great representation.
Yeah, where's Jubilee been, man? They turned her into a vampire for a little bit in the comic books. It was a whole weird thing. She could show up in my Wolverine offspring thing. I mean, she, you know, his adopted daughter, really. So you can throw her in there too. But
do you guys remember the Gen X live action show they had a while back?
Do you guys remember when Noah King Bates joined us for this podcast?
No, he messaged me pretty shortly after we started. He's like, "Oh, that's why I sent JJ." I was like, "I thought you were both coming." Whatever, it's fine. I mean, JJ's more interesting. Noah, no, I'm just kidding.
That's fair.
He'll get on here though.
He's got a cooler shirt, that's for sure. JJ, I've got to ask real quick. The posters behind you, what are those posters on that wall?
These maps. Are all like maps and stuff from different D&D books and adventures. So I have like tons of D&D stuff. This is my D&D room.
They look dope. I love
it. I was hoping for a Westeros poster. But
invite me to D&D sometime.
Of course.
Coach is a big board game guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Coach,
I DM, so yeah.
You ever played the board game Game of Thrones that takes a day to play, JJ? Because Coach makes me play it multiple times a year, and I have declined the last three times. Because
that sounds fun. I'll do it.
It's super fun. But I like my ratio of winning. Anyway, we're getting off topic.
No, it's good. We're all nerds here for all kinds of different nerdy things. So keep that in mind. This was fun. I think this was a fun podcast to do. I think it's interesting to look at again, why do we love movies? It's often because of things like this. It's because parallels we don't even realize we're seeing. It's just subtle little things of why you love movies more than you think you do. This is a perfect example of that. So I'm glad we did this. In some ways this was a borderline into the Marvelous Depths episode, but I'm glad to see it. Look at all these beautiful colors.
I could almost rename this Marvelous Death Gwen Stacy, but I won't, because we, you know, it's
nope. I love it.
Gotta
Seriously, check us out on Facebook and YouTube and just look at these beautiful watercolor pictures. It's so amazing. I love it so much.
Or, you know, go see the movie, but good plug, yes. Coach. We definitely want to have everybody joining our Facebook groups and stuff. Yeah, and JJ, of course, thank you for joining. We just met earlier today, and you definitely delivered, so we appreciate you, and you're invited on whenever. So
yeah, awesome. Seriously, yeah. Let us know. Did you guys enjoy having JJ? If you think he looks stupid, even though you couldn't see him, then just tell us that, and we'll never have him on again.
I'm not the one anymore. More color that washed me out, but anyway.
That's true. He's got you there.
For those of us who can see, I know for the podcast,
I deserve that as well.
Imagine just like yellow, but then Coach is also like albino white. So it just kind of like, it's just a flat, it's like a bunny in a snowstorm, just like the Kingpin.
All right, we're going to end this episode. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Try not to have too much fun without us. Like, rate, subscribe, all the good stuff. Join us on Facebook. And thank you guys for joining.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey guys, in case it wasn't obvious, we here at Marvel Stuff and the Gotham City Rogues podcast do not own any of the IP we talk about. We're just fans having a good time talking about the things we love.